This show is a production of Migration Media. To learn more about us and see a complete list of our shows, visit migrationmedia.net.
From Migration Media, this is Migratory Patterns. I'm your host, Mike Shaw. As Victoria Thaney sees it, to become an American, you have to put in a lot of work. After all, that's been her story. Victoria's path to the U.S. started with a stroke of luck. Her mother won the visa lottery, granting her and her daughter entry into the country. But as many immigrants soon learn after they arrive, the streets of America are not paved with gold. At one point becoming homeless, acts of kindness and generosity helped them survive. Eventually, the gifted loaves of bread and the teachers who went the extra mile and their hard work paid off. Victoria embodies the American dream, having earned her PhD and achieved success in the medical equipment business. Her story is an inspiration and shows how America is made better and richer when we welcome the most needy of people who ask to enter. I met Victoria through a mutual friend when she was traveling through China on vacation while I still lived in Beijing. Her story and the grace with which she shows so much appreciation for the opportunities that a living in America has afforded to her has moved me. And it kind of sets me off on people, especially those in government, who are trying so hard to slow immigration to a trickle, if they even want to see any immigration at all. It's not just absurd logically. Everyone, everywhere is an immigrant if you go back far enough. But it's self-defeating. You'll never find a more patriotic citizen of any country than one who has had to work and fight to become one. They make people like me, who've been blessed with citizenship through an accident of birth, look lazy by comparison. I love America, but I've never had to try to be an American. I am constantly in awe of the people who do. Enough gushing from me, though. Let's get into the story. Please sit back, relax, and enjoy my conversation with Dr. Victoria Thaney. Dr. Victoria Thaney, welcome to Migratory Patterns.
Thank you.
Where is home?
So, it's funny you ask that, because you asked me exactly the same question when we were back in China, and now we're here in New York City. And when you originally asked me, I had no idea. I really struggled to answer that question. But after some time passed and I was thinking more about the question, I was actually just on a business trip in Georgia, and I was getting really antsy. I was really ready to come home. And I told that to myself, oh, I'm so ready to be home. And I realized that at that time point, my home is New Jersey. So right now, my home is New Jersey. I would say on a bigger picture, it would be US, but that's not where I am from originally.
Oh, okay. So there's a story, which is why we wanted to get you on the microphone. So before we get to the story, what are you a doctor of exactly?
I have a PhD in neuroscience.
Neuroscience.
That's right.
So when I speak, you know all the things that are happening in my brain that are making me, the words go from my consciousness to my mouth, right?
I actually studied more of molecular biology.
Okay.
So more on a mechanistical level of how your, you know, neurons are firing, how they're talking to each other, and more on the molecular level.
Okay.
Yes.
All right. That's fascinating. And I could do a whole podcast on you just teaching me about what you just said. But that's that's great. I love it. So yes, where did you come from originally? Because from your accent, it's pretty obvious you're not from America originally. So where did you begin your journey?
I was born and raised in Moldova, so the city of Chisinau. And that's where I spent my earlier age. And then I moved to US. So I actually moved to New York City.
How old were you when you came to the US?
Oh, I was about 12 years old, and we immigrated to New York, and it was a really rough start for my mom and I.
It was just you and your mom?
That's right.
Okay.
Yes, it was the two of us. So we had a really rough start to the whole immigration process. We ended up in a shelter in Bronx, and there came a time point where my mom decided to send me back home. So I went back and lived with my grandma, and then came back and we moved to California. So
wow.
I was a teen already.
That's a long process.
That's right.
I'm sorry, how old were we when you came over?
12.
And then how long were you here before you went back?
It's a little blurry, actually.
Wow.
Yeah, it was, I think It was less than a year for sure, I think.
Less than a year.
Yeah. Yeah.
So was this like a situation where like the migration plan didn't work, or was it a, was this like a desperate fleeing, or not a desperate fleeing, but was it just kind of like a last minute, we got to go, and then you didn't have a plan? How did it turn out so rough?
I think my mom had a really good plan when we were coming here. And actually, back in Moldova, we had a decent life, but she was searching for more opportunities, better life for herself and me. So we moved here. She had some savings. Things really didn't go the way she planned. I think her expectations were different from the reality. And
as is often the case with people who come to America, like for whatever reason, that when they migrate here, it can often be a lot rougher than they think it's going to be.
That's right. Yeah. Yes. And I don't think she was ready. I don't think I was ready. It's something you just do and you either sink or swim, right? So my mom, she's definitely a winner. So she started to swim. It was very difficult for us. So we end up losing all we had, and she had really hard time finding job. And, you know, she's an engineer by education. She has her master's degree. But
when you come over here, that doesn't count.
It doesn't count.
It's so stupid. Yeah.
That's right. Yeah. So there's no, you know, no connections, not knowing the culture, the language, the system, how things work. So going from a successful, fairly successful woman in Moldova to, you know, cleaning floors and, you know, taking care of the elderly people, changing diapers, working three jobs, having a kid, and, you know, struggling to rent a room. So it was very difficult. And we ended up in Bronx in the shelter. And I will never forget, we're sitting there and, you know, kind of having our free meal. And she looked at me and she started crying. And I was like, Mom, why are you crying? You know, we're speaking in Russian. And she was just like, I can't believe that, you know, I failed myself and I failed you and I dragged you into this place. And, you know, I was a child, so I was more optimistic and trying to, I'm like, oh, it's okay. You know, we're going to make it through it. And I think that's when she made a decision. Kind of, we were living in a really bad, they put us in kind of hotel shelter area and really rough town. So we're, I would say, the only white people there. So experienced a lot of racism. And so not only being immigrants, but also white people, you know, in a community where, you know, we were different.
That's a big change for you too.
Yeah. Because, you know, we didn't have that kind of diversity back in Moldova. So there was other, you know, issues that I was dealing with at school and with the kids. And so I think my mom made a decision. It was kind of maybe time to send me back while she, you know, establishes herself and gets out of the situation. And then she did. She worked very hard. And once I came back, we moved to California. We had a nicer home, nicer school district. So
how long was it before you came back?
Oh, it was like a year something. So it is kind of blurry time for me.
But that's yeah, like an amazing amount of time for her to like reestablish herself and get on her feet in such a way that you can come back.
That's right. Yeah.
That's pretty amazing.
Yeah. So
your mom sounds like a really hard worker.
She is. I'm very proud of her. And so once I came back, I think that's when I really start counting my time in America, because before it was just kind of all survival and blur and just confusion. And
now, so when you came back, you said you were like 14, 15?
No, I was at like 13, 14, going 13, 14.
So yeah, you were just like starting high school.
That's right. Yeah. So I started high school. It was in ninth grade, actually.
That is a crazy time to be coming over to a new culture like that.
Yes.
So, and you went right back over to California? You didn't come to New York, you went to California?
That's right.
Wow. So what was that like starting in California as a new immigrant in school? Were there any other immigrants in your school?
There was. So there's many kids from Mexican families.
Because
so
you were in
California, Orange County.
Orange County,
yeah,
okay.
Yeah. So they were, I mean, we didn't speak the same language, but I was put in ESL, which is English second language classes. And it was really sad because the teachers treated us like we were stupid and we weren't very bright. And it was just, you know, language. We didn't speak the language. We bonded with each other, but I was still an outcast because I think the kids spoke Spanish to each other and I spoke Russian. So
I was gonna say there were a lot of probably Mexicans and Spanish speakers, and you're the only Russian there.
Yeah, we didn't have any other Russian kids in class.
I would say if I had known a Russian in high school, the best way I would have, I mean, did you teach them how to swear in Russian? Because that's like the best way to make friends with someone.
Yes.
Oh yeah, that's the, because Russian swear words, Russian swear words are awesome.
Yes, they are.
We don't have to say them here, but that is a great way to bond with people. Like, oh, let me teach you how to say this. Like,
yeah. After a drink and some proper Russian vodka, yeah, that's when they come on. But we're too young for that.
Yeah. So you're bonding with the ESL kids, but you're not feeling like you're treated very well by the teacher or respected, at least. Were you successful in school? Like, how hard was that academically to because you're a doctor now.
Yes.
So obviously you succeeded, but how hard was that in the beginning?
It was very challenging. I didn't speak the language. In ESL, they didn't really put much effort in teaching us English. They kind of let us be. I think I didn't really bond with the ESL kids because we didn't speak the same language. Everybody's speaking Spanish. And then I didn't bond with American kids because, I didn't speak English. But one thing I did notice that I wasn't learning anything. I was sitting there watching movies or whatever they were playing for us. And
you're just watching movies in the ESL class.
That's right.
Here, learn this.
Yeah. So I told my mom, it was like, you need to get me out of there and put me in a regular class. I will struggle, but at least I'll try to learn something. And good thing I had pretty very strong math, sciences. I think that took me a long way because that's you're dealing with numbers. I was always a rock star in math, so that really helped me. And then I struggled with English because all the kids were already writing, reading, and I remember too, like when they would make us read out loud something, I was so embarrassed because I had this thick accent, and the kids made fun of me, right? So my name is Victoria, but in Russian, the short name is Vika. So it's
Vika.
Like Vicky, but Vika.
Vika.
Yeah. So they called me Vika no Spika.
Oh, no. Oh, yeah. That's awful.
It was really sad.
Oh, Vika no Spika. Yeah. Oh, come on.
But it's okay. It builds character. That's for sure.
It's just dumb. Come on. They couldn't think of something better than Vika no Spika.
Vika no Spika. That's me.
All right.
So yeah, it was, but I kind of, I maybe not the smartest person in the room, but I'm very persistent and I will sit there until I get something right. And I think that persistence paid off. I had many teachers tell me that I would never graduate, and I graduated with honors with over 4, whatever GPA I had. It was like 4.1 or something. I went to college. I also struggled in college.
Where'd you go to college?
I went to San Diego State.
Oh, so you stayed in the same area.
Oh, well, I moved from Orange County to San Diego. I turned.
Oh, that is a ways. Yeah.
It's a couple, three hours or so. So I moved to San Diego State, did my undergrad there, and then stayed in San Diego and did my PhD at Sanford Burnham Medical Research Institute.
So. Well, you showed them.
I showed them. Yes.
That's awesome. You know, I have to say, this has nothing to do with migration, but it is. Being the husband of a teacher, and her mom is a teacher, her brother's a teacher, my mom's a teacher, you know, I kind of have a feeling for what teachers, good teachers should be. There's nothing worse than a bad teacher. I remember I had a teacher in the eighth grade. I was trying to get into this elite preparatory high school, and the school I was in, I had aced all my grades in, you know, middle school and junior high, but the reason I was acing everything is because the curriculum was crap. Like, they weren't challenging us. I was bored. It was too easy. And they started to do some more advanced classes for some of the kids who were going to try to go to these exam schools, mm-hmm. these elite schools. And they wouldn't put me in the class. And my mother came in, and she was very upset, obviously. And we came in for a meeting with the teacher, the eighth grade teacher. And my mom said, why won't you teach him this pre-algebra, you know, this preparatory class? And the teacher said, well, he doesn't need it. And she said, well, he's going to apply to this high school. And she said, he's never going to get into that high school.
Oh my God.
And if he gets in, he won't succeed.
That is horrible.
It is horrible. I mean, she said that. I mean, it was the worst. I mean, I look back now and I'm just thinking that is like the worst thing to tell to a kid.
That's
like,
right.
It's just awful. And now I got into the school, showed her, right? Then I did fail out my first year. I had to take 3 classes in summer school and but I didn't get kicked out. Like I stayed in and I graduated and I showed her. Showed her. But a teacher who just tells you stuff like that is just, I don't even understand why they would.
But I think it's, there's bad teachers and there's good teachers. And I think part of my success is actually in the good teachers. I got very lucky that besides those bad teachers that I had many very good mentors in my life that helped me. And my first teacher, I think, who took interest in me in high school was actually a Russian teacher. So I think she felt a little sympathy for me.
Did she speak Russian?
She did, yes. Oh. So, it's sad. I don't keep in touch with her, but she was my math teacher and she really pushed me hard and she was a good mentor. I didn't know anything about the college system, so she would chat with me about, how do I go applying for college after I graduated of high school. And there's others. And, in my undergrad, during my PhD, my advisor, Dr. Cowell, and even now, I moved from science more into business commercial world and I have great mentors now, but I think I would never be where I am without the people that took interest in me and believed in me. And for every 10 people that didn't believe in me, there was one person that gave me strength and helped me out. So I really think my mom and I would never be here if we didn't have those good people in the way that helped us. It's really funny, I don't think about this moment often, but I remember when we were in the Bronx, we were walking one time, my mom and I, and it was kind of later, and this guy pulled up, and it was literally, I don't know if you remember, but back in the day, there was this trucks with bread, they would drive around and like,
of course,
bread.
Yeah.
And he just saw us walking on the street and he was so confused, like why we were in that neighborhood and what we were doing. He started chatting with us. And like at that point, we like really didn't have any money. And he gave us a bunch of bread. Like he just gave us bread and then he took us shopping and he bought us like toothpaste, like just, general stuff, like, and just like a nice guy. And like, he's just like, whatever you guys need, I don't know how much he spent back then, but, and that's it. And he drove away and he left and we never saw him again. And then, there was an older couple when we were living in this shelter hotel, they would bring like their old clothes from their kids. Like there's always somebody who would, besides all the bad stuff that was happening, there's always nice people that helped us out. And I'm very grateful to them because without them, we wouldn't be here, right?
Yeah.
So
one of the problems that people have noted, or one of the omissions that I've made, is that I don't interview people who have this kind of story very often.
Oh.
And most of the people who I've spoken with have made an affirmative decision to move. They've had the agency to make the choice, and yes, your mom had the agency to make a choice. Obviously she did it, but it's a very different kind of agency. It's more like I have an escape route as opposed to I just feel like going to live in this other place. Like it's a totally different way to move. And obviously when you got here, it's a very familiar sounding story, especially in today's world where this is in the news all the time. And the fact that you had someone, like you said, just on the street one day handing out some bread and saying, I'm going to help those people. Like, yes. That's America.
Yes.
When you're in that situation, obviously you're very young at the time, but maybe when you look back at that kind of situation, does it make you feel like a part of the place? Does it make you feel like this is a place I want to be and be a part of? At what point is there a shift where you stop feeling like an immigrant or a refugee or whatever, a migrant, and you start feeling like I'm now part of this place?
That's a good question. I think there's always a sense of I'm different.
Do you feel different now?
I do. I know the culture. America is my country, it's my home now. I would do anything for this country because it done a lot for me. But I always feel a little bit different. And I think it's because I do come from another country. I have accent that is there. And, you know, I think for most part, I do a good job where people don't notice, but certain words will slip and you'll hear it, especially if we have a glass of wine or... But yeah, there's always this sense that I'm different, but I do feel like I belong here. I do feel like America, the immigrant story is not dead. Like, I don't feel that way. And I don't think it's dead. And it's very sad to see what's going on with other immigrants. I really hope that they get a chance like I did to make something out of them, you know, out of their life and have a better life here. But I don't know if that answered your question or not. But
it started to answer my question. And actually, I want to dig in more to this. But let's actually like take a breath, have a glass of water, and we'll come back and we'll dig in more to that, okay?
Sounds good.
Hey, everyone. If you like the kinds of conversations that we have here on Migratory Patterns, you should check out Pop Abroad. Host Michelle Ibarra is on a mission to help expats and migrants live their best lives overseas by talking with the people who are doing it right now. During her first season, she's talking about community, why we need it, how we can use it to get a leg up, and how the best community leaders make theirs work. Listen in as she interviews the incredible women who are killing it overseas to hear how they are creating community in their adopted homes. You can learn more and hear the latest episode at migrationmedia.net or just search for Pop Abroad wherever you get your podcasts.
So I'm also interested, like you said, you know, I feel like America is my country now. And I can't really relate to that because I was born here and I've always felt like it's my country. I felt damn entitled. Like I kind of grew up.
Oh no.
Yeah.
You're one of those.
I'm an entitled.
Let me tell you.
I'm an entitled American, right?
No.
And, you know, give me what I want. I want what I want. I'm an American, damn it. And that's just my natural state of being. That's the way I've been for as long as I can remember.
Yes.
So I can't know what it was like to go from not feeling that way to feeling that way. Mm-hmm. So I'm kind of wondering is there a point, like what do you recognize a period where that switch happened? Like when did you start to feel like I'm an American and this is my country?
Yes, I think it's a very good question because I think to become an American, you have to put a lot of work. This country, I think I traveled a lot all over the world, seeing how people live. It's not easy to make in this country. It's not easy to just have a life in this country. You know, most Americans are workaholics. They're killing themselves, you know, to make living, to make good life for their families. And as an immigrant, when you come with nothing, you have to compete with a lot of very smart people, hardworking people.
Who know the language.
Who know the language, who know, you know, how things work. So to make it here, you really have to be tough. But once you go through that, I think that's when you become an American. It's not when you get your citizenship. Some people feel that way. You know, I felt that I would say, after I graduated college and after I started working and contributing to the society, that's when I start paying my taxes. That's when I...
the first deduction in a paycheck, they're like, okay, now I'm an American.
Now I'm an American, yeah. And I do feel like I'm an American. It's funny, my culture and where I come from is very important to me. But I think about Moldova, it's like my birth mother, right? Where America is like my adopted mother. She adopted me and she gave me this chance and, you know, now she's my home. And I can't forget my birth mother, but this was the country that put me on the path to success and gave me the tools and resources to be successful now, right? And I think the more I move up in my career and, you know, the better I'm doing for myself professionally and financially, I'm starting to feel more American. And I feel like this is what we were working for. This is why my mom brought me here. You know, I did the whole education thing. I was there in school for 10 years. Now I'm working. I'm paying my taxes. I'm contributing to the pool of knowledge, to science, to society, and I feel American. I feel like I earned it, and probably more than some of the people that are born here.
Yeah. I want to say two things about that. Number one, how many of those kids who are in cages could be the next neuroscientist? You know what I mean? how many of them could be the next PhD in neurology and figure out some amazing new drug or some amazing new diagnostic tool? Like, how many of them have that potential? We'll never know because we're putting them through so much just trauma. It's just, I can only imagine, like, if you had been in that situation, what a waste that would be. What a loss it would have been to America, you know?
I think so. And I think when we were struggling, we were given resources, like we were given a home, we were given food, you know, there was some basics.
The basics.
Yeah, that helped us. And I'm not sure I would have gotten that in my home country. If we were struggling, we were like that. Friends and family would help, but we wouldn't, I wouldn't, if I worked as hard and studied as hard and did everything I did in US back in my country in Moldova, I can't believe I said my country.
Yeah.
I would not be in the same place. And I recognize this, and that's why I'm grateful to be here.
Yeah.
And to make something out of myself and contribute.
I mean, you can do just math. And you can say, yeah, there was a little bit invested in you in the beginning, some basic shelter, a little bit of food so you didn't starve to death, but not a lot. It's not like it was a welfare state situation, like where you were living off the teat of the government.
No.
You had some just bare essentials. Heck, you had to have a guy in the street buy you basics just because you didn't have everything, right?
To help us going.
That basic small investment in you has resulted in you, again, just talking about raw numbers, contributing a heck of a lot in tax revenue.
Yeah.
You're upping real estate value where you live. I mean, you know, it's not rocket science. If you invest a little bit in the beginning in the potential of people who come here and want to work hard, which is just the act of coming here is working hard. But if you invest just a little bit in people who come here and work hard, you reap huge benefits.
That's right.
Yeah. You're like Google. Like, you invest a little bit in the beginning and now you're paying off big time.
Thank you. Yeah. That's a big compliment.
And the other thing I want to say, like you mentioned it, and let me just say as a native, I will say it out loud. People, Americans who talk about immigrants or they down talk people who come over here and they just look down on them. It's like you never had to work to be an American. Like you didn't, you woke up and you're an American. Like you didn't have to work for it. You don't know what it's like to be an American because you've never had to work for it. Living overseas myself, I can never be, like, I can't be Chinese. I can't be Indonesian. I can't immigrate to those countries and I really wouldn't want to. But I understand what it means to be an American because I've gone outside of America and I've recognized
what you have.
Exactly.
And the opportunities you're given, education. And
Yes. But even all of that is not as validating as the things that like someone like you goes through because you had to really work for it. I still didn't have to work for it. I can recognize it. I can see it because I'm living outside of it, but I still didn't have to earn it.
Yeah, but I think, you know, speaking of earning, you know, to be here, that opportunity, I also meet a lot of immigrants that come here that think it's going to be easy. And they think that, you know, some of the Russian girls I met in a way that would come here and they're beautiful girls. And they think that, you know, money grows on trees here and they'll come and conquer America with their beauty, you know, and it doesn't happen. For some people it happens, but
well,
a lot of them kind
our
of...
Our president married one of them.
But yeah, a couple, you know, some of them just rely, like they just think it's a given. They come here and that's it. And I don't think that's very American. And we have to fight for our, you know, for the chance to be here. It's a very competitive society, but to go back to what you were saying, there has to be some basics to help people to get going. And once they start abusing those basics, that's when it becomes a problem, right?
Right, yeah.
But you have to give a platform. Like my mom and I, we were given a platform and that really helped us and set us off.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. So let me switch gears just a little bit and talk about what you do now. So when you graduated high school, you go to college in San Diego. What made you want to go into the field you're in now? Can you talk a little bit about that?
Yeah. So originally, I was planning to go into medicine. So I was pre-med, was planning to go do emergency room medicine.
Was that something you thought about even, because you came over in high school, was it something when you started high school, you were like, gotta be a doctor?
That's right. Okay. The immigrant.
There you go. Gotta be a doctor.
Gotta be a lawyer, a doctor, or an engineer.
I didn't want to say the immigrant, but you said it. Yes.
Yes. So us immigrants, I don't know what it is, but I think it's a sense of maybe stability that these jobs provide, and the immigrant parents usually stress out.
I know my limited experience with Eastern Europeans and Russians, it's the doctors, the dentists, they're very respected, yes.
That's right, yeah. So, but funny enough, my mom never actually pushed me to choose anything. So it was my own choice. And I wanted to help people. I was interested in sciences. So medicine was something I was interested in. And then as I was doing my studies, I got involved in laboratory as part of the curriculum. You're supposed to do some lab research. So bench research. I got into this really cool group where we're working, studying essentially heart disease and, you know, after people suffer from a heart attack, you know, how do you rejuvenate the heart cells after that damage has been done? And so that got me interested. I'm like, what is this research? I never heard of this before. It was a very, you know, I had a nice little small project. It was creative. And I realized that I'm actually very good in the lab. And it's a very creative job and very interesting and mentally stimulating. So I kind of switched gears and decided to go for a PhD instead of an MD. And after I graduated undergrad, I went and I worked for the Scripps Research Institute. We're working on developing vaccines for HIV. It's a very interesting project. Working with a big group there. They're doing really important work in HIV research right now. And then while I was working there, I was applying for grad school. I was learning about different labs, what do they do. And I found my mentor, my PhD mentor, and he was studying HIV-induced dementia. So he was studying how HIV not only kind of attacks your immune system, but also the damage it does in your brain. So it was a really interesting field where I would study immunology, virology, and neuroscience. And that's kind of the path I chose. And took me 5.5 years to finish my work there. And then I switched gears again.
Well, but you still kind of work in the field, but now you're kind of on the business side.
That's right. And I work with a lot of very brilliant, probably, you know, some of the smartest people we have in the U.S. and other countries, the scientists, they're doing drug development. And it's a very stimulating job. So I'm still, you know, in touch with science. I have my clients that I work with. And then I also get to learn about business and sales, marketing, which I'm interested in the long term, because I do want to eventually run a company like a biotech company. So those skills are really important. You can't just come in with technical skills, right?
Well, we need you to start a company and have it be a unicorn worth over $1 billion, so we can point to yet another company started by an immigrant.
Okay,
that's what we need.
That's the plan.
That's the plan.
All right.
So, do you get back to Moldova at all?
I do. Yes.
How often do you go?
Not as often as I should.
Why do you okay? However often you go, why do you think you should be going more? That's interesting.
Because I have my family there, my sister is there, my niece, my dad, my grandmother, everybody's there. So my mom and I are here in the U.S. And after I finished PhD, I moved from San Diego to New York City. So now I don't even have my mom nearby, but yeah, my whole family is in Moldova. Hmm. So I feel like I'm really missing out on all the life that's going on there with my family. And, you know, I listened to some of your podcasts and I heard, you know, some of the speakers you had kind of express the same issue they're dealing with, that they see their friends' lives, their family lives go by and they can't really participate in that, right? So you feel guilt, you feel you want to be there, but you can't. Right. When you're a starving PhD student, can't really fly to Moldova every month.
Yeah. I have been on a trip back to the US and I've been feeling a little bit of that myself, actually. I've been feeling, you know, I'm on this
guilt.
It's a kind of a guilt. Like I didn't have enough time to see everyone I kind of wanted to see or should have seen. Mm-hmm. And I just didn't have the time or the space and I just didn't even reach out. And I felt, I mean, I felt bad about it, but there's nothing I can do. And I'm on this kind of grand adventure. You know, I'm living in Bali now, and it's this new exciting phase of my life after living over a decade in China. And I come home on this whirlwind tour of a couple of cities in the US, and I'm seeing some people, and I can't see everyone I want. And it just feels like, not like I'm bragging, but kind of like, it feels like I'm passing through. And it feels like I'm passing through and I'm almost like a tourist from my old life.
Yeah.
Like my old life is a tourist attraction and I'm just kind of checking it out. And then I'm leaving again. And I haven't talked about this with anyone yet. I feel weird about it. I almost feel like a little dirty. It's very strange. Yeah. It is interesting. And uh-huh. You know, I'm going through this whole process. I don't know what's happening to me. I should really speak with a therapist about this.
Probably, yes. I have a good lady for you.
Yeah, thank you.
But she's here in New York charging $300
an hour. Oh, that's great. I'll just have to interview more therapists and talk about this. But yeah, so like I'm, you know, this is a new experience for me because when I've come back before, it's not felt this way. And I don't know if it's because my life is shifting. So like I've lived in Beijing, or I had lived in Beijing for, you know, 11 years, and now I'm living in a different place. And the way I'm going to be living my life in the future probably is going to be only a few years in each place. So before, it was like I could have just moved to another city in the US. Like I just moved to a place, right?
And that can be a big change already.
It is a big change, right? But I just kind of moved somewhere. But now I'm almost like a nomad. Which is different. I'm not living in a place. I'm hanging out in a place, and I'm probably going to move again real soon. Like, it's just, I don't know. And something about that different frame of living, this way of living, just changes the frame of reference through which I'm viewing America when I'm here visiting. And when you said, I think why it triggered me when you said, not as often as I should have. That made me think of like, oh man, should I be back more? Like, yeah, like I probably won't be back for another couple of years. Should I go back? Like, whoa, what's happening to me?
Well, I think our mind plays these tricks on us too, right? And I don't know if it's coping mechanisms or whatever it is, it makes us feel a certain way because we are different and we are missing out on a lot of things, you know, that's happening with our families, with our friends that we grew up with, but then we're gaining other things and we're gaining new perspectives, and it depends what you want from life, right?
So another thing that you made me think of when you talked about going back is the fact that you have a lot of your family over there. You have a sister, your grandmother. So I'm kind of wondering how you relate to them. They're obviously Moldovan, they're not American. Do you feel culturally separated from them? What are your interactions with them like when you go back? Are you a foreigner?
I am a foreigner. And my grandma makes fun of my accent when I speak Russian.
Do you speak Russian with an American accent now?
That's right.
Wow.
So I can't speak any language without an accent now.
That's so interesting.
Right?
I bet you, wow, you probably actually can't even live in a place without an accent. Like you're an American with a Russian cultural accent and vice versa.
Yes.
Wow.
Yeah.
I never thought about that.
Yeah. It's kind of an awkward situation, I guess.
So were you closer to them before you left? Do you just feel close now?
No, we weren't. I think we weren't as close when I was there because my mom and I were kind of living separate life from my father, and my sister has another mother. So we're all kind of separated. But over the years, we actually managed to keep our relationship, and it actually grew over time. It is funny how we communicate, though. It's a lot of, as you probably know, Skype and other ways, but it's over the phone and internet, essentially. And when I do go back, I am the foreigner, and, you know, it's very clear. And everybody tries to protect me from everything that can happen in Moldova because I don't know how things are. And it's funny because they don't need to do that. But one thing, though, recently happened with my sister, I think, you know, we talk a lot about just basic stuff that sisters talk about. And I realized that my family feels very sorry for me.
Really?
Yes. And you would think it would be the opposite because I was that one kid that made to US. I got all the education I wanted. I have the career I want. I created a life that I wanted and had all these opportunities. I travel, I meet wonderful people. And I thought they would look up to it. But after they heard everything that I've been through and what it took me to get here, they feel really sorry for me. And they feel like the amount of work I put in every day, the hours I work, they just don't understand how a human should work this much. And they always ask, like, well, when do you relax? When do you go see your friends? I'm like, well, we see each other on the weekends but you still work on a weekend sometimes. And they cannot understand how much we work here. And they like, what kind of life is that? They're like, my dad said, he's like, I rather live in Moldova and have a tiny little apartment and, the basic needs met, but have time for friends, have time for health, have time to cook a healthy dinner and not just eat on an airplane or a bus. I travel a lot for work, so I'm on the road probably 4 days out of a week. So they just cannot understand how I can live a life like that. And they feel bad for me.
Wow.
That I have to work so hard.
Wow.
Where they have, because they have their basic needs met and they're happy.
This is another thing that I think about a lot when I hear a lot of the rhetoric around immigration on the conservative American side. There's this like lack of understanding that people who make the journey, and no matter where they're coming from, I mean, you obviously flew, you didn't swim, you didn't walk over the Rio Grande, but I mean, the people who make...
I built the boat from Moldova and made my way out.
That's right. But the people who make the journey, the people who make that choice to leave, it's like you said, it's not easy. They're not doing it because they just feel like it and, oh, maybe America is nice. They're doing it because they really, really want to or really, really need to. Right. And it's so interesting that you said that your family sometimes feels bad for you because you've had to work so hard. Like, they're back there. Like, yes, they could have a higher standard of living or have more, but you know something? That's their home and they're happy where they are.
Yeah.
And they see what you had to go through and they're like, man, that poor woman.
And grandma's cooking the pierogies and making borscht and the family's together and they're laughing and they're getting together for birthdays and weddings and, so on. And I'm here working by myself. And every question, like anytime my grandma calls me, it's like, did you eat? What did you eat? Is there anything to eat? I'm like, grandma, we got food in US.
I know exactly what that's like. Well, it's like what you said, when you move, when you're an immigrant, you gain things and you lose things.
Yeah.
It's the same. Well, I really appreciate you taking the time to come in and speak with us. Vika, I appreciate it. Thank you so much.
Thank you so much for having me.
Well, there you have it. Please check out the show notes for links to more information about my guest and to reach out with questions, feedback, and interview suggestions. Don't forget to subscribe and to leave us a like on your favorite podcatcher. Migratory Patterns is a production of Migration Media and is executive produced by me. Thanks so much for listening, and we'll see you next week.
This has been a Migration Media production. To learn more about the lives of international migrants and see our lineup of shows, visit us at migrationmedia.net or look for us on Twitter, Facebook, and Instagram.